NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Coming up today, we'll hear a replay of Florida This Week. It's a TV show that features four local people discussing state, local, and sometimes national politics. Among our guests on this program, Daniel Ruth, former columnist for the Tampa Bay Times and former host here on WMNF. Also, one of our other hosts, Shelley Reback, is on this program. One of the big topics on the show, the governor and the legislature have just made it harder to amend the Florida Constitution, made it harder for citizens to amend the Constitution. We'll talk about that and much more on this edition of Florida This Week. Coming up next, the governor signs into law a bill that makes it harder for citizens to amend Florida's Constitution. Florida marks the third anniversary of the Pulse nightclub tragedy. President Trump is coming to Orlando this Tuesday to announce he's running for re-election, and the plan to widen I-275 through Tampa gets the go-ahead after a lot of citizens say no. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Dan Ruth is a professor in the Honors College at the University of South Florida. Peter Schorsch is a political consultant and the publisher of FloridaPolitics.com. Shelley Reback is an attorney and a Democrat, and Sandy Graves is the Pasco County Republican State Committee woman. Well, so nice to have you all here. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a controversial measure that will make it harder for groups and citizens to put proposed constitutional amendments on the Florida ballot. Lawmakers passed the measure, HB 5, which places new restrictions on the petition-gathering process for putting proposed amendments before the voters. Among other things, the bill makes it illegal to pay petition gatherers based on the number of petitions they collect. Also, the bill requires submission of information about petition gatherers' addresses and their dates of birth. Supporters of the bill say it's needed to combat fraud and efforts by out-of-state interests to use the initiative process to change Florida law. But critics argue the legislature is trying to block citizens from putting into the Constitution what the legislature has failed to do. So, Dan, was this a good move by the legislature and the governor?
No.
Why not?
It's funny. This is a crowd that likes to talk about freedom and liberty.
You're talking about the Republicans
and more freedom, yeah. And more freedom and more liberty, and then more liberty and more freedom, unless the public starts approving stuff that they don't like. And so that is really, I think, the primary motivation. It was spurred on by the felon voting rights issue last year that we dealt with. And so I think this is a variation of voter suppression.
But the argument is on the part of the Republicans is, look, you've got out-of-town billionaires or out-of-state billionaires who are paying for petition
drives. As opposed
to
their crowd of out-of-state billionaires, the Sheldon Adelsons of the world and so forth that help to fund all their... The problem here is very simple. These citizen initiatives get born out of the fact that the legislature is a feckless, gormless, cowardly institution. And when it doesn't take up issues that they should be taking up and deal with legislatively, like the felon voting rights, the people rise up and they take the issue directly to the public to vote on. This is classic democracy. Those petitions that were gathered by the various organizations ahead of the Florida felon voting thing, that was classic grassroots democracy at work. And it passed. And it passed by like 67%, if my memory serves me correctly. And so this is an attempt to undermine the rights of the people to petition their government for redress of grievances. It's pretty simple.
Sandy, do you think that the access to the ballot needed to be tightened? Were the Republicans on track here?
Well, I think it protects the Constitution. I think it's weakened a Constitution if you just allow these initiatives. And I have never been a fan of initiatives. We're a representative government, not a true democracy. And I think it's very important that we realize that the Constitution itself is supposed to be a framework of how that government's supposed to work. And I think when we put a lot of ball and chains on it that takes away. The majority of the Constitution is the framework of how our government works.
But when the government doesn't work, that's the problem.
But
the legislature
here's the
could take these issues
okay,
up and pass legislation
about,
to deal with them, and they don't.
Daniel, hold on. You talked about freedom, and of course we have that. But a government of the people and by the people and for the people is actually a contract we have with our representatives. If they don't do the job we like them to do or want them to do, we vote them out.
No, we don't.
We don't sidestep the legislation process by going to the Constitution.
We don't have that opportunity anymore. This particular legislature is doing everything it can to protect its power and to protect it remaining in power. We have voter suppression, we have gerrymandering, we have any number of things that prevent people from voting them out of office when they don't do what the people
want. We don't have gerrymandering anymore. These are Democrat lines that were drawn in 2016, and the Democrats lost 5 of 6 competitive state Senate races. This isn't about the Felon Voting Act. This is about one person in Orlando. This is the anti-John Morgan bill. They don't want the minimum wage bill, the minimum wage amendment making it to the ballot. You really have to give it to John going on Twitter and saying, hey, I don't care what you do. I don't care how much I have to spend. In November, there's going to be a vote to raise the minimum wage.
I still think it's special interest groups and big money that are behind most of these initiatives. They're not grassroots motivated.
Every signature is a grassroots signature.
It is.
It doesn't matter who funds it. People still have to sign it or refuse to sign it.
Think about it, Shelley, though. These are people on their way into the tax collector's office or the government center. They're really not thinking. It's just a signature that they put down almost because they think it's their civic duty to do that sort of thing. I can't tell you how many times I've been called the day before the vote or even while they're doing their absentee ballot that people ask me what to vote for because they don't know. They don't know how to read the amendment. They don't understand it. And they're asking me. People need to let our representative government, work. That's all I'm saying.
And
can I say one other thing? You can change a law pretty easily, but once it's put on the Constitution, it's there almost in stone. It's very difficult to change
it. Don't forget, if you take the felon issue for just a second, that amendment was approved by the Florida Supreme Court. It passed muster on its wording. It was not ambiguous. It was very clear. People knew what they were signing. They knew what they were voting for. And this was a grassroots effort on the part of its supporters to do what the legislature had failed to do, its job.
Let me ask you all, a lot of these amendments, whether it's the Felons Voting Amendment or it's medical marijuana, tend to pass by a large margin. So, and I think to Dan's point, why doesn't the legislature, knowing what the mood of the public is, pass something like medical marijuana or felons voting? Because
Or the minimum wage.
Or right now we have...
Peter,
I think it's a mixed bag. Remember that some of the constitutional amendments have failed in the past, like the previous medical marijuana legislation. I think it's interesting that the Republicans are so upset about the constitutional amendments that came forward when most of them were proposed by a Republican-dominated Constitutional Revision Commission.
The latest amendments.
Yeah, this is a straw man argument. Jamie Grant, the representative from outside of Tampa who proposed it, I had to ask him, why do you hate democracy so much? There are not out-of-state billionaires controlling them. I know who funds these amendments. It is not out-of-state billionaires. I don't even think it's Sheldon Adelson. I don't know if he still has his druthers enough to fund something in Florida or not. It's mostly big interests in Florida, and they just don't want to see any more amendments get passed, like the electric deregulation bill. That's another one that they're trying to keep off. The assault weapons ban, they don't want to see that one taken. This is a really bad bill. I'm a big fan of Ron DeSantis, but I really wish he wouldn't have signed this one.
All right. Well, it's been 3 years since a gunman massacred 49 people and wounded many others at a gay and largely Latino nightclub in Orlando. The anniversary was observed this week with somber memorial gatherings. The gunman murdered 49 people and wounded another 53 before being killed in a standoff with SWAT team members at the Pulse nightclub. Many of the people who survived still suffer from post-traumatic stress.
At the time, it was the worst mass shooting in modern American history, but it's since been surpassed by the Las Vegas country music shooting massacre, where 58 people were killed.
Peter, are we better off since the Pulse nightclub massacre? Did we learn anything, and has the state advanced to protect people better, or have our GLBT rights protected better since Pulse?
No. Unfortunately, we are still debating LGBT rights this very week. A state representative from the Panhandle, Mike Hill, had some very homophobic comments calling for the stoning of gay people. He laughed at that comment, and now in response to that, he's having a rally outside of a newspaper in Pensacola. That's how dire the situation is.
Because
right now,
the newspaper outed him and outed his comments.
They outed his comments. And at the same time, Ron DeSantis, who, again, I've said it, I'm a fan of his, he left out LGBT in his resolution. On the first draft. Right. It took two state lawmakers from Central Florida to get that back in there.
Sandy, what would you say? Have we learned anything? Is the state better off since the 3 years since the Pulse massacre?
I'm going to say anytime something horrendous like this happens and you're faced with evil, I think it changes people's hearts by seeing it. I was briefly acquainted with one of the victims of the Pulse horrible night. But anyway, he had briefly been part of my puppet team because I had a puppet ministry for years, and his friends from Gaither had brought him. So when you have that sort of connection with that and you see that, it breaks your heart. And these were just kids who had chosen a lifestyle. That's fine, because we're free in this country, like Daniel was saying, to choose our life and our liberty and our pursuit of happiness. And these kids were out there doing that. So when something happens like that, certainly it affects you. Certainly it changes how you feel. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very, even though he might have left the LGBTQ off in his initial, but he came back and corrected that. He went to the site of where the memorial is going to be, the governor, DeSantis, and I think it was heartfelt from him. And I was very proud of him also for dedicating that $500,000 that he'll be signing in next week and making sure that we remember that sort of thing, because we live in a country where people are free to choose.
I think this was a staff oversight on the proclamation. But excuse me, I know your feelings are heartfelt, but it's not a lifestyle.
Right.
It's not a lifestyle. It's not a choice. It's a sexual orientation.
Well,
and we need to get beyond that sort of misunderstanding.
I want to say that the best way to honor the victims of the Pulse massacre is to honor them with action. And it's shameful that the Florida legislature has not taken action on the Florida Competitive Workforce Act, which is a bipartisan co-sponsored piece of legislation to protect people from discrimination in employment, public accommodation, and housing on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. That could not even get a hearing in this legislative session, and that's shameful.
Several lawmakers I've spoken to, Republican lawmakers who were not sponsors of that bill, and you're right, it is bipartisan. I believe Joe Gruter's was the sponsor. I think they had a record amount.
73.
I've spoken to three Republican lawmakers who were not sponsors. I think we may have a silver lining out of the Mike Hill situation and out of the DeSantis flap. They're going to jump on board sponsoring the Competitive Workforce Act in 2020. I have a feeling we're going to have a silver lining, and that bill is going to get through the legislature.
I hope so. I hope you're right.
And Dan, one area that hasn't been changed, I think it's fair to say, are gun laws in the state of Florida. We did have some minor changes after the Parkland shooting.
And the only reason that occurred was that the legislature was in session when that atrocity occurred, and so the legislature was forced to do something, even though it was cosmetic. But yes, we still need an assault weapons ban. We still need universal background checks. We still need to get rid of body armor and cop, all of that stuff.
Circling back,
the legislature won't address it.
Circling back to the first story, we now have sufficient signatures to send the assault weapons ban constitutional amendment initiative to the court,
to the Supreme Court for review.
We have that now. What's going to happen now with the passage of HB 5 to the, you know, whether or not it's going to be able to proceed as a public initiative? We don't know.
That was the intended consequence.
All right. Well, this coming Tuesday, President Trump will kick off his 2020 reelection campaign with a rally in the I-4 corridor. He'll be in Orlando at the Amway Stadium, which holds 20,000 people. The president boasted this week that 74,000 people have already asked for tickets, far above the arena's capacity. The rally is set to begin at 8 p.m. Trump will be joined by Vice President Mike Pence. Meantime, liberal and progressive groups in Orlando plan to hold their own rally that night in response to the Trump event. They're calling it Win with Love. So, Sandy, what does it say that the president's kicking off his campaign in Orlando?
I wanted to just go back to this, Daniel, for just one second. I apologize, but sometimes if we're going to trip people up on just vocabulary, my heart is in the right place
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
My heart goes out, and we do. There's been a lot of changes in my lifetime, and I'm happy for that. So let's move on. But Trump's coming. Trump's coming, and he's got a big crowd, and it's the I-4 corridor, and I say I-4 more years, and it's...
What does it say that he's going to a largely Democratic stronghold?
It says, hey, I'm coming to get you.
Okay.
It says, and I'm right here in the middle of the I-4 corridor, and... happy to be here and
taking
the fight on.
He's going to a Democratic county.
Well, the I-4 corridor has been competitive over the past several election cycles. So I'm sure there are some Republicans that live in the I-4 corridor that are willing to show up, even if 50,000 of them are probably all part of his imaginary friend Elmo under the bed. But, you know, it's a smart political move. It'll be the first time he's actually gone into territory that wasn't solidly known to be Republican. So I'll give them credit for that.
I just hope Orlando gets their money up front, because as been revealed this week, he doesn't pay his bill.
No.
The Republicans have not paid for their expenses of the inauguration. They haven't paid for his rallies in the various towns around the country. He's stiffed basically every community that has hosted him. So I just hope they get paid up front.
He's trying to pay in rubles.
Yeah.
All right, Peter, what do you say?
I think we have to look at this move through the perspective of the Trump campaign, that everything they do is to lock down Florida. I mean, we heard how Hillary kept using the word firewall in 2016. If there has ever been a firewall, it is Florida for Trump. He cannot get reelected. And so every move, as we speak, them signing the Sanctuary Cities bill today, that's about 2020. You look at the staff that's been put back into place, every legislative action, everything, including the HB 5 signature, everything DeSantis does is about the movement to November 2020 and getting Florida back in the win column.
You think HB 5, though, is overwhelmingly favored by most Florida voters, the people that will come out in 2020?
I think what it does is it heads off, like if John Morgan isn't out there pumping out turnout money for his minimum wage amendment, that cuts in. That takes out maybe 5,000 more votes that would have turned out that day. If you take out the assault weapons ban and you take out the $1 million that would have gone into get out the vote for that initiative in November, and you take that off the table.
So it's voter suppression.
Everything is about Trump winning Florida again.
Through voter suppression.
And I rather that too many Puerto Ricans are going to be showing up for this thing.
You know, I got to say that if anybody's able to get around HB 5, I think it's going to be John Morgan.
He's got a lot of money.
All right. Well, the Hillsborough County Metropolitan Planning Organization has voted to keep two controversial Interstate 275 projects in the county's five-year transportation plan. Before the vote this week, the meeting room was packed with people at the county center. According to the Tampa Bay Times, about two-thirds of the people who spoke during the four-hour public comment section were against the projects. One project would widen I-275 in both directions from MLK Boulevard to Bierce. The other would add another ramp to the I-275 southbound exit to I-4. Backers of the plan say they will help reduce traffic congestion. Opponents say the expanded roads will only attract more traffic to the routes, and the new widened interstate will soon clog. The vote will not guarantee the two projects will be funded or built, but it will keep them as an option moving forward. All right, Shelley, are these projects needed?
No. These people are no better than the climate crisis deniers. They deny every scientific study, every research project that has absolutely established that road expansion does not do anything to solve congestion problems. It just induces more demand. The more you build, the more cars you'll put on the road. The only thing that's going to solve our congestion problems here in Hillsborough County is doing what we need to do to bring forward some fundamental mass transit opportunities, to reduce our parking minimums so people use mass transit, to develop a robust bicycle infrastructure. These alternatives are the only things that are going to get cars off the road. Road building is not going to do it. This is a giveaway to the road building industry. And in addition, this is a regional thing. This is for people driving through the city of Tampa to get either into downtown or past us, and it doesn't protect the neighborhoods around the areas that are going to be expanded. Those people are going to suffer the consequences of greater pollution, noise pollution, light pollution. For what? It doesn't serve the city of Tampa in any way.
Sandy, what would you say? As somebody that lives in Pasco County, maybe you use that road from time to time. What would you say?
And by the way, my family was in road building, so But anyway, I just say we're trying the best we can to keep our people in Pasco and get them employed there in Pasco. And I'm sorry, I think Shelley blames the influx of people from Pasco on this widening road situation. We're doing everything in Pasco just to get Ridge Road built, which has been 20 some odd years. So, and also working with the FDOT on 54 and 56.
What about Shelley's point that if you widen the road, you're just going to attract more people to use that road, and you end up a few years later with another traffic congestion problem?
That could be true, but you're not going to get people to move on necessarily into mass transit and those situations. Right now you have that problem that you have to deal with. And like I said, what we are trying to do in Pasco is keep our people in Pasco so they're not on your roads.
You know, one of the blessings and burdens of being the oldest person at this table, I think, is that for almost 50 years, since I first came to Tampa almost 50 years ago, this discussion has been ongoing about what to do about the malfunction junction and I-4 and 275. And we've been talking this issue to death, and Shelley's absolutely right that all you're really doing is nature abhors a vacuum. So the more roads you build, pretty soon we're going to just have a giant highway between Florida Avenue and Nebraska going all the way up into Pasco County. Mm-hmm. And that's not the solution. I agree, the solution, I don't think bicycles are the solution. And these stupid scooters we have all over downtown, forget about that.
But we do need
mass transit. And we have resisted that for 50 years, and this is the price you pay.
Peter, if we were to ask State Senator Jeff Brandis about trains or some sort of similar transit, he's very powerful up there in the legislature. What would Jeff say about Shelley's idea of trains?
Well, I think she would say that all of the things that we're talking about are not going to be the transportation solutions in 10 years or 20 years. And so as we redesign cities into citadels and people move back into cities, these ideas of these mass roads are going to be outdated. We're going to outgrow them.
They're outdated today.
The idea that you need big parking garages in downtowns isn't going to matter when you're going to take your autonomous vehicle into downtown and then it's going to park itself. But Daniel brings up a point by accident. Tampa can't manage the 1,600 scooters it got. I mean, people are literally fist fighting in the streets over these scooters. So when we talk about all these other options like biking, I think about, well, who's going to bike in 100-degree weather? Or who's going to take a scooter across Nebraska Avenue? I just don't know if the city of Tampa is ready for this.
We're going to have to deal with scooters and bikes on some other show. Thank you all. Before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? Peter, let's start with you. Your other big story of the week.
A little bit of a scoopage. The DCCC, the Democratic Campaign Committee, has been in town three times. They have all but locked down Adam Hattersley, the state representative from House District 57, to challenge Ross Spano for his congressional seat. Andrew Learned is going to drop out of that race and run for Hattersley's state House seat. So that's a big pickup for the Dems.
All right. Sandy, your other big story?
Well, I'm kind of interested to know what Andrew Gillum's baggage is and what else is packed into a suitcase. I'm really interested to find it. more out about that.
You think
that.
There's more to be said on that issue?
I think
issue.
So.
All right.
Yes.
Shelley, you're on the big story.
Democratic State Senator Janet Cruz has had to turn to the public to fund a project to get the lead out of our local public schools, which is solely because the Florida legislature has diverted so much money away from the public schools and into charter schools that they didn't take up this critical project that keeps our kids safe. So now, thanks to Janet Cruz, we have to turn to the private sector to raise money to put filters in the water fountains of our older schools, those that were built before 1986, just so our kids in the heat of Florida can have safe drinking water.
So even with the half-cent sales tax increase passed in Hillsborough County last year, there's still enough money for the lead filters?
Right. We need to raise money because this is a project that needs to be addressed immediately. You know, the tax money comes in over time.
All right. Dan, your other big story?
Dovetailing on that, school superintendent Jeff Eakins announced he's retiring in, at the end of the next school year. I think the record on his tenure is mixed. When you have high schools in Hillsborough County where their air conditioning doesn't work, it's not good.
But he got the half-cent sales tax.
Yeah, he did, and we'll see what happens with that. But this is a huge school district and one of the largest in the country, and you almost have to wonder, even though it pays pretty well, you almost have to wonder who would really want that job.
Eighth largest in the country.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No AC and no safe water to drink. That's
Thank
bad.
Thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night, and my guests on that show were Daniel Ruth, former columnist at the Tampa Bay Times, Shelley Reback, a Democratic activist in Hillsborough County, Sandy Graves, a Republican state committee woman from Pasco County, and Peter Schorsch, who runs a website called FloridaPolitics.com. And if you want to comment about anything you've heard so far on today's Radio Activity, you can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. And you can also call us up at 813-239-9663. On that program, we talked about how Governor DeSantis has just signed a bill to make it harder to amend the Florida Constitution. We talked about what lessons or what improvements have been made since the Pulse nightclub massacre 3 years ago. We talked about the president's trip to Orlando tomorrow, where he will officially kick off his reelection campaign for 2020. President Trump will be at the Amway Center in downtown Orlando tomorrow night about 8 o'clock. We also talked about I-275 widening through Tampa. And if you want to comment about any of those topics, you can email the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. And Anonymous sent this email in earlier. From the 352 area code, they say Daniel Ruth is a snowflake, okay? And they go on to write, Republicans merely succeeded with the Florida Constitution where Democrats failed with the Electoral College, writes 352. And Adam writes this, I like how the Republican was forced to acknowledge how building more roads does not alleviate traffic concerns, but then essentially said she didn't care and we should do it anyway. As we've seen with climate change, Republicans have a real problem with accepting studies and research from experts when it clashes with their own views. And that's a comment from Adam. Leah writes this regarding interstate widening. She says, I live in Tampa and commute to Riverview. I'm an environmental science major. I don't agree with widening the interstate, but an extra exit lane to I-4 and from I-4 to I-275 would be amazing. Talking about the backup southbound on I-275 trying to get to I-4 eastbound. Leah's in favor of that flyover ramp. Thank you, Leah. And then let's see if no other emails from new people have called in. 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And I think we've got a phone call. Let's go to Kathy in Tampa. Hi, Kathy. You're on WMNF.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy. You're on. What would you like to say?
I was just wanting to comment on what Sandy, I believe her last name was Gray, from the Pasco Republican representative was saying.
Okay.
Concerning the representative democracy, I found that really, really offensive how she was basically saying that we need to just, you know, abide by whatever our representatives have to say rather than understanding the idea that we can have a direct democracy and that there's lots of ways to try and get to that point to have a direct democracy. And I hope she's listening, because I just found it extremely offensive that she was saying that, you know, there's no place for a democratic poll petitioning, and, you know, basically just completely saying that is something that we should not have within our democracy. And I found that not only offensive, but a bit scary and potentially damaging, you know, that kind of opinion from somebody in her position.
Yeah, you know, I think our Constitution says that we have the right to petition and for redress to our government. Sandy's point was that we elect representatives, so they should carry out the bidding of the voters. And if you don't like what they're not doing, then vote that person out of office. That was her point, I think.
Right, I know. But as we all know, that's a pretty antiquated view, and we've been trying to change that way of our democracy for a while now.
Now, Peter Schorsch would disagree with me. He was one of my panelists, but he would say that we've fixed gerrymandering. I would say we haven't fixed gerrymandering, and my best examples would be that if a majority of Floridians who register with a political party are registered Democrats, and a smaller number are registered Republicans, and a smaller number than that are independents, and we have a legislature that's dominated by Republicans, and in almost veto-proof majority in Tallahassee, I would say that Tallahassee is not yet truly representative of what the political diversity within the state of Florida.
I would have to agree.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, great to hear from you. And this is WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity. Let's go to Bill in Holiday. Hi, Bill. You're on MNF.
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
I'm good.
Well, on the Pulse thing, I brought this up before. I really haven't heard anything since. But I'm really skeptical that one guy killed and shot all those almost 100 people. From what I've, you know, it seems that everybody was shot within a very brief window, beginning from when the SWAT team entered. Everybody seems to think that the one guy killed all those all those people before SWAT got to him. I think it's the other way around. They shot all those people before they got to him.
Who shot but those people?
I think most of them were shot by the police.
Oh. Okay.
As they went in, before they got to him. Not the other way around.
I see. So you think if we check the bodies, we would find projectiles that would be linked to police weapons?
I'm sure they've done all that, but they haven't. I don't think they've released any information on it. They should have done all that. I'm sure they did. But it's all been kind of, don't hear anybody else bringing it up.
Yeah, all right. Well, Bill, thanks a lot. I think there were always questions because that the siege, I think, as I recall, lasted about 4 hours. So the gunman was started firing late in the evening, and then he wasn't.
Well, no. It was most of the shooting happened once the cops went in. They broke through with some kind of vehicle first, didn't they?
Okay, well, I'm not up to speed right now. I'd have to go back and look at the original reporting.
It wasn't just coincidence. I did the Las Vegas thing. That was legit. That guy shot and killed all those people. That was, but this one guy didn't do all that. Most of them, I believe, were shot. But they, you know, they don't want to advertise that now.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot. Thanks for raising. I think the place to start with that would be to look at the autopsies of those unfortunate victims at Pulse. And I don't have that information right in front of me, but I certainly will keep my eyes open for what you suggest. Bill, thank you. Sue writes this, why do Republicans hate mass transit? I would like an explanation, writes Sue. All right, Sue, thanks for that question. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Teresa in St. Petersburg. Hi, Teresa, you're on WMNF.
Hi. To the guy that wrote in about the Electoral College, number one, Republicans can't win without the Electoral College because most of the time they don't win the popular vote. So, and I was wondering what happened to Daniel Ruth's column in the newspaper, because I haven't seen it lately. And so he's not writing for it anymore, huh?
You know, I didn't talk with Dan about that on Friday, but it used to run in the week following Bill Maxwell. So when Bill's column would appear in the Times, then the following week Dan's column would appear in the Times. I do not know.
Well, I know it appeared, it was in Thursdays for a long time. But and as far as Republicans not liking fast transit, it's because all their development buddies. They get money. They get kickbacks. They're, you know, that's what they do. They get money from the developers. So naturally, they.
But if you're if you're living in a development that's 20 miles from the heart of downtown from your job, it would seem that you'd want to have mass transit leading from that suburb.
Republicans don't care. They don't care what happens to people. They could care less. I mean, that's their actions anyway. They say a lot of stuff, but you know. And as far as all this initiative to keep people from signing up, you know, for our constitutional right to petition our government, that's just another voter suppression. That, you know, there's no fraud. The only fraud that Republicans consider is us Democrats voting. They don't want us to vote. They want to be the ruling party, and they're going to, you know, destroy the Constitution. They might as well, you know, they're already doing it. They just don't care about it. They hate America, I guess. I don't know. Or just seems to me they're just starting to hate our Constitution and our rule of law and everything. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, Teresa, thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, Teresa, thanks a lot. You know, I think there is an effort to reduce the number of voters in the country when you ask for things like driver's licenses. And if you're a senior citizen and you no longer drive and you don't renew that license, I think you could make the case that they are making it harder for people to vote. Thank you, Teresa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And this email comes in from the 239 area code. They say, your guest, Sandy, our horrific president, and most of the other Republicans leading the charge away from democracy all seem to think that they are the anointed ones and know better than the rest of us what's best for everyone, writes Anonymous from the 239 area code. All right, Anonymous, thank you for that. David writes this, I'm very disappointed that the governor and legislature have once again changed the rules and made it harder for citizens to amend the state constitution. While in the meantime, making it relatively easy for the legislature and the Constitution Revision Commission to introduce such initiatives. There is no power to the people in Florida. It's all about power to the lobbyists and the special interests, writes David. Not sure that they have made it easier for the Constitution Revision Commission to get things on the ballot. I think that's still up in the air, and I think they still want to deal with that, and I think they want to make it harder. But there's no question that they have made it harder for citizens who want things like, you know, there's a variety of things that you might have voted for in the past. You might have wanted smaller classroom sizes. You might have wanted to try to do something about gerrymandering and reduce it. You might have wanted to have more land conservation. You might have wanted legalized medical marijuana. Or you might have thought that, well, once you've served your sentence in prison, that you ought to have your voting rights restored. In the coming year, some groups have decided that they want to ask you a few more questions. They want to ask whether or not you want to see the minimum wage increase to $15 an hour by the year 2026. And they want to ask you if you want to ban military-style assault weapons. Also, if you want to expand Medicaid. Those are all potential issues that are going to be on the ballot. There's no guarantee that they will be on the ballot, but there are groups out there gathering petitions right now for those three issues and for some other issues. And this bill that was signed by the governor is going to make it harder for petition groups to gather signatures to put those kind of issues on the ballot. There's no doubt about it. And I would say that raising the minimum wage to $15 per hour by 2026 is a modest idea. 2026 is 7 years from now. And already many people in the country who are working in working for fast food restaurants or working in other jobs are getting $15 an hour. In some cities like Seattle and other cities, they've already raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Florida would be years and years and years behind the times if we decided to do it by the year 2026. That issue is going to be on the ballot. My guess is that if it's on the ballot, it'll pass overwhelmingly. Because I'm sure that most people think that that's a modest move to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. It's not really radical. Radical, I think, would be to say that Florida has a living wage. That is that we'll pay people the average cost of a rent of an apartment for two people. That would be a radical idea, to pay them enough so that they can afford housing. But we're not at that point. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Kevin writes this. Making the citizen initiative process harder is the Republican response to Florida having recreational cannabis in our state. The vaping lobbyists got what they wanted, writes Kevin. All right, Kevin, thank you for that. And if you've got a comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can call us up. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. Here's our phone number, 813-239-9663. Sarah in Arcadia writes this. The Republican on your panel was very careful to say multiple times that the Pulse victims had made a lifestyle choice to control the dialogue for the far-right listeners instead of honest sympathy. She was offensive on so many levels, writes Sarah. That's Sarah's opinion. And Bill from Holiday says, I take my comment back on the Pulse nightclub shooting. Just found a video of it I hadn't seen before. There may still have been some shot by police, but not what I thought, writes Bill from Holiday, who I think called earlier. All right, let's go to Carol in Plant City. Carol, you're on Radioactivity. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The predominant feeling that I have listening to everybody right now, I've lived in Florida all my life, and I'm just absolutely just felt, I vote every time. I'm a Democrat, but I feel like, you know, gerrymandering has to be predominant in this state. And I'm not up on all of the districts. I know that, you know, there was issues a year or so ago, up in the northeast part of the state near Gainesville, I guess. And that actually affected a Democrat in that case. But, you know, do you know, sir, are you up on the different districts? We have a lot of counties and districts. Has there been studies done? Because I'm kind of ignorant about that. But I do know what I see. And I see for decades, or a couple decades, the Republicans are dominant in the state legislature, state government, governorship, and until something changes, like you said, it's just not representative of the voters, the Democrats, the Independents, the Republicans, and I just find it hard to believe that Democrats don't, you know, get out and vote. And if there was ever a time, it is now, because they're using the power that they have in every way possible to thwart the will of the people of Florida. And it just really ticks me off. I'm so frustrated. I've been frustrated for years. And I just, you know, I listen and I'm looking for answers, you know, on the radio, on your program and other programs. Where are the answers to this?
We're going to talk about this tomorrow on this show, but I'll just say a little bit. And Carol, thanks a lot for your phone call.
Thank you.
This is generally, I think, the way to look at it. What's really happened is that Republicans, I think, were very smart in 2000. We redistrict every year every 10 years rather, based on the census results. So after the 2000 census, the Republicans were essentially in charge or made some deals to become very powerful in the redistricting process here in Florida. And the redistricting of congressional seats and legislative seats took place, and they gerrymandered. And I think there's probably no doubt about it. And they did it again in 2010. After 2010, there was a petition drive here in Florida, and several constitutional amendments were put in place to make the awarding of districts less partisan. That was approved by a judge in Tallahassee and also by the Florida Supreme Court. So there's less gerrymandering going on. But my thinking, and I haven't looked this up, and there are places to look this up, but I think what's happened is that if you look at a Republican-leaning district, it might contain, just I'll throw out a number, these aren't exact, 55% Republicans. But if you look at a Democratic-leaning district, it might contain 60 or more percent Democrats. So what they've done is they've continued to pack Democrats into their districts, and they've made the Republican districts slightly more competitive. Now, that's what I think is going on. We'll talk about it tomorrow. I'm gonna get somebody who knows a whole lot more about it than I do on this radio show tomorrow. Peter Schorsch, though, on my TV show just a few minutes ago, said, "No, look, if you look at the six competitive Florida Senate districts in the last election, Democrats lost five of the six." And Peter was making the case that gerrymandering doesn't really exist anymore. Well, maybe, but it's certainly worth talking about. And there are some websites. I think it's MCI Maps is a good place to look at. And you can look at the Democrat and Republican distribution in all of the legislative and congressional districts in the state of Florida. And you can take a look at that and see if I'm right. Let's go back to the phones. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And Carol, thanks a lot for that. And be sure to tune in tomorrow, because we'll be talking about whether or not gerrymandering still exists. Let's go to Fred in St. Petersburg. Hi, Fred. You're on MNF.
Hi, Rob. I watched your show on WEDU Friday night, and I listened to your replay. And I echo what I think their name was Kathy called in, and several other listeners, that Sandy Graves, or whatever her name is, in Pasco County, her comment about she didn't like people's initiative, citizens' petitions, because it's democratic, and we're not democratic, we're a representative government. I thought that's atrocious. I can't believe she said that on the air. That's ridiculous. That's what I had to say.
Yeah. All right. Fred, thanks. Thanks for your thoughts.
Okay, all right. Rob, good to hear from you. Thank you for your show, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Fred. 813-239-9663. You can disagree with something you've heard here if you want. You can call up 813-239-9663. Sue writes this: as the daughter of a mom who passed away in 2017, who was a longtime Republican, but she cast her last vote for Hillary Clinton. Adult children, writes Sue, take your parents to get an ID card available from the Department of Motor Vehicles. I did that with my mom after she stopped driving. Adult Democratic children, help your folks vote. Well, I would say that for all children. If you've got parents and they don't drive, make sure that you do everything they can. If they want to vote, make sure that you help them vote. I think that's really great advice. Whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green, Libertarian, Socialist, whatever. 813-239-9663. The traveling nurse writes this: I don't mean to sound pessimistic, but I'm a realist, and Florida already is very much well behind the times. Just the good old boy mentality has not changed, writes a traveling nurse. Okay. And Liz writes this: we are a republic, not a democracy. Oh, boy, that statement struck a chord with me and should motivate folks to get to the polls and vote. I write my representatives at least weekly and am astonished when one of my reps, Daniel Webster in particular, writes back and ignores the substance of what I say and states his opinion on the subject I am raising questions about. I've given DeSantis a chance because of his environmental statements, but between his meeting in Israel and this latest stunt taking power away from citizens, I suspect he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's Liz in Spring Hill. And we've got an open line you'll be able to get through right away if you want. 813-239-9663. Jerome in Tampa writes this. Just like our local road construction, when the minimum wage gets fixed, it will be obsolete, writes Jerome in Tampa. Yeah, that's what I fear, is that if we raise, if folks do vote to raise the minimum wage, last time Florida voters voted to raise the minimum wage was about 8 years ago, and we raised it slightly above the federal minimum wage. So our minimum wage is somewhere around $8.50 an hour. The federal minimum wage is under $8 an hour. But we overwhelmingly, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Constitutionalists, Greens, Libertarians, Socialists, everybody in Florida voted in big numbers to raise the minimum wage last time. I suspect this next raise will go through pretty quickly, too, if it gets on the ballot. We don't know if it's going to get on the ballot. David writes this, I was hoping that you would ask Congresswoman Castor whether she believes the public is best served by allowing large electric utility monopolies to continue dictating decisions about how we generate and purchase electricity. It seems to me that the monopolistic model impedes progress on climate change by prioritizing utility profit over the public interest and blocking innovation, writes David. David goes on to say the Florida legislature is owned by these utilities, of course, and I'm wondering whether there is any hope for federal legislation. That's David's email out there, and David makes a good point. The right now, the utilities are regulated by the Public Service Commission. Public Service Commission really is in the hands of appointees of the governor. The governor is operating at the behest of big donors like the for-profit utility companies. So there's not much chance, I think, that right now the Public Service Commission would say, oh, hey, utilities, you should generate 10% of your electricity through renewable means. Yeah, so I think there is a problem there. David, thanks a lot for saying that. Let's go to John in St. Petersburg. John, you're on WMNF.
Hey, Rob. Just a quick question for you. I heard the discussion about somebody, was that a state legislator that said something about the initiative and that we're a republic? I'd like the name of that person, please.
We're the Republican on my panel, Sandy Graves, said that we're a representative. We have a Republican form of government. That person.
Well, actually, what's happening? We're getting a dictatorial form of government right now. So, she's Sandy Gray, and where's she hail from?
Sandy Graves. She's a Republican from Pasco County.
Pasco. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
All right, John, thank you. And let's go to Corinne in St. Petersburg. Corinne, you're on WMNF.
Hi. Listen, talking about the minimum wage.
Yeah.
I started working outside the house in 1964 when I graduated high school. And the minimum wage back then, I can't remember how much it was. It was disgusting. But I felt like I was a queen with that kind of money. Today, that amount of money would be $15 an hour. So what are we arguing about? We're just getting back up with what inflation has done to us over the past 50 years.
Yeah, you know, I remember in the early 1970s making maybe $2 an hour or something like that.
$1.75, yeah.
Was it $1.75 in the early 70s? Yeah.
Well, no, wait a minute. Maybe not. Maybe what? That was in 69 when I graduated college.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In 1969, it was $1.60. In 1974, it was $2, and in 1976, it was $2.30, and
that would be more like almost $20 an hour now.
Yeah, you know, whatever I was paid in the early 1970s, I was taking home about $100 a week, and that was enough to pay for an apartment back then.
Oh yeah.
But now, if a
little one bedroom, yeah.
Yeah, but now if you're paid $8.50 an hour, that is not enough to pay for an apartment.
No. And, you know, I mean, I don't know why people are beefing about $15 an hour. That's still poverty level for crying out loud.
It sure is. It sure is. All right, Corinne, thanks a lot.
I personally am looking for somebody who's an engineer. I've got an idea of how to make electricity and keep it going forever. But I need an engineer. So if anybody's listening, call in. My name is Corinne. I'm a donor. I'm a lifetime member. And give them my phone number.
Okay.
All right, Corinne.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
Thanks for your phone call. And Gene writes this. So if the minimum wage gets a huge increase, what about the rest of us workers that are specialized professionals? Are we all going to get $10 an hour raise as well? We shouldn't be having a blanket hourly requirement. It should be that employees are based on a scale of the business revenue. For example, a CEO shouldn't be making 1,000 times more than their lowest paid employee, writes Gene. Yeah, I suspect we'll be talking a lot about the minimum wage over the next 18 months. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean Kanaan. He's coming up next. He'll have a part of Bernie Sanders' speech about what it means to be a democratic socialist and much more. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.